I think I'll throw the next one right into your lap, Mr. Curran, if you don't mind. This one comes to us from Mrs. Mary and Clara Carroll, 3557 70th Street, Jackson Heights, New York. Now, they must have worked on this together. Now, Mr. Curran, perhaps someone told you. You're a sports editor, I believe.
No, just a common hired hand.
Well, someone must have told you, Mr. Curran, in your capacity as common hired hand, there's going to be a fight tomorrow night between Schmeling and Lewis.
Uh-oh.
Have you heard of it?
I have.
Good.
Slightly.
Now, if a sports writer, or a common hired hand, characterized tomorrow's bout between Schmeling and Lewis as an example of siamachy, S-C-I-O-M-A-C-H-Y, siamachy, what would he mean?
I'd have to look up in a dictionary first to find out.
Well, we might do that on some other program, but we can't do it on tonight.
Well, it looks like there goes $5.
$5 is right. Well, they're starting beautifully, folks. They're starting beautifully this evening.
Any volunteers? Easy go.
Mr. Adams likes to throw away Mr. Kieran's $5. Any volunteers on what siamachy would mean? S-C-I-O-M-A-C-H-Y.
Sounds like a name in the rural comedy.
No, though it's a good guess. Siamachy means a... How about you, Steve?
No.
Siamachy is a futile or mock bat, a contest with a shadow, a visionary battle. Now, Mr. Chair,
suppose we stop this entire program for a couple of minutes and let's get down to something really serious. Who's going to win that fight tomorrow night?
Are you asking me?
I am asking you. I have $5.
Can you trust me?
No, certainly not.
Well, I don't blame you. I think Joe Lewis is going to win, so you'd better bet on the show.
Ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, we're giving you an inside tip direct from Mr. John Kiernan of the New York Times. Joe Lewis is going to win tomorrow evening.
Thank you.
Our next question. We did ring up $5 on that, didn't we? Next question.
You ring up $5 on this one, too, maybe.
Next one comes to us also from Brooklyn, New York, from Miss Florence Mendelson of 120 East 19th Street. Now, attend to this very carefully, gentlemen. It's rather complicated. The following 9 numbers appear in the titles of well-known books. Can you mention 6 of these 9 titles? We'll take them one at a time, and you can all club together on it. The first one is 1001. Volunteers? Mr. Adams.
Knights.
1001 Knights, correct. The next is 5. Mr. Adams.
5 Little Peppers and How They Grow.
Wasn't that cute, folks? You should have seen Mr. Adams' face. Or maybe not, maybe not. The next is 3. That should be fairly easy. A title with the word 3 in it.
Soldier. Soldiers 3.
Soldiers 3. Any other volunteers? Any other...
3 soldiers.
Very good. Now, do you intend to go on that way, Mr. Kern? Yes. 3 soldiers, 3 volunteers. Pardon?
3's a crowd.
3's a crowd. Very good.
3 men on a horse.
3 men. That's enough. Let's get on to another number. They know they're 3's. How about 20,000?
Leagues.
Mr. Curran.
Burns. 20,000 leagues under the sea.
That's correct. And how about 7? Mr. D.
House of the Seven Gables.
House of the Seven Gables. Very good.
Metro Star.
No answer. Now let's go up a few million. 400 million. Mr. Adams.
Guinea pigs.
400. Guinea pigs is quite wrong. Guinea pigs.
No, that Chinese book.
Yes,
written
by
400 million customers.
400 million customers is correct. Well, that's one wrong so far. Now, 1/2. 1/2. Mr. Jaffe.
Half a loaf.
Half a loaf is perfectly all right. I don't suppose you would allow Ernest Hemingway's to half and half not, would you?
No.
No.
Not tonight.
How about...
I wrote a book called Half a Loaf, Much Obliged.
Well, that was Mr. Adams advertising his book.
That was Mr. Jaffe advertising Mr. Adams' book.
And I must say, the boys are getting together this evening as never before, ladies and gentlemen. 1.
1 in a million.
Is that a book? I don't know. Just a phrase you thought of. Mr. Adams.
Won by waiting.
Now, folks, what am I going to do with a man like Mr. Adams who says won by waiting?
By night? By Edna Lyle.
He wouldn't give his birth and death date. Her birth and death date. No.
Maybe alive for all I know.
Mr. Adams is very reticent this evening. Well, we'll have to allow that. How about one life, one kopeck? There's one. Now, the last one is the number 40. 40. Now, just a minute, boys. Just a minute, Mr. Jaffe.
Life begins at 40.
Life begins at 40 is correct. Or would you possibly admit the two volumes of 20 Years After by Dumas? Well, I think they got by on that. Next question comes to us from Mrs. Donald E. Carlson, 594 27th Street, Oakland, California. This is a scientific question, very educational indeed. Question. Sound waves travel at different rates of speed through water, through air, and through steel. Arrange them in the proper order, beginning with the one through which sound travels fastest.
Well, I think...
Mr. Jaffe, your students are listening to you this evening, Mr. Jaffe. Be careful.
My heart is quivering right now. I think sound travels fastest in steel...
Correct.
And slowest in air.
That's correct, with water in between. Very nice.
You guess.
Now, Mr. Dietz, how would you like to lead off on this one? This comes from Mr. A.D. Hoteling, 17 and a half East Robinson Avenue, Orlando, Florida. Question. Name four families that have been represented on the screen by actors of two generations. Four families that have been represented on the screen by actors of two generations. That makes about eight generations in all, as far as I can figure out.
Fairbanks.
Fairbanks is correct.
Barrymore's.
Barrymore's.
Bushman.
Bushman? Now, who are the two generations?
Francis X. Bushman and Francis X. Bushman Jr.
You got me there. I'm sure that's quite correct, though. Next.
And Tyrone Power.
Powers. There are two Powers. That's quite correct. Any other volunteers? That's four. Mr. Adams, can you give us one or two more just for the fun of it?
I wouldn't know.
Any volunteers? The Costellos. Would that be right, Mr. Dietz?
Yes.
There are a couple of Costellos.
Maurice and then Helen and...
Yes. Don't tell us all about your friends. A couple of Beeries. A couple of Bennets. That's correct.
How about Will Rogers?
I beg your pardon, Mr.
Will Rogers.
Will Rogers was there a...
Mary.
Mary Rogers.
Oh, yes, Mary Rogers. We're doing very well this evening. Boys are giving us a lot of free information. The next one comes to us from Mr. Baynard H. Kendrick, 129 West 10th Street, New York City. Question. Give the name of the dog, the name, not the breed, associated with any four of the following. I'm going to name five altogether. One, the Barretts of Wimpole Street. Two, Little Orphan Annie. I'll go through these again, gentlemen. Three, the Thin Man. Four, the Yale football team. And five, Mickey Mouse. The name of the dog associated with any four of the following.
Can we collaborate?
Yes, you can collaborate. Mr. Adams.
Well, the first is Flush.
The first is Flush for the Barretts of Wimpole Street. That's correct.
Can you name him in any order? The Thin Man is Aztec.
They're perfectly correct. That gives us two.
Well, the Eli dog was Bingo.
No, the Eli dog was not Bingo.
Well, then I've been grossly deceived.
Well, one of us has been deceived. The Eli dog is...
Handsome Dan.
Handsome Dan, Mr. Adams, quite correct. Now we have two more to go. Little Orphan Annie. Little Orphan Annie. Nobody heard that, I hope.
Come up.
I beg pardon, Mr. Deep?
No.
Don't know?
Don't know.
Don't know.
No.
You're an honest man, Mr. Dietz. Oh, we may invite you again. How about Mickey Mouse? Mickey Mouse? Mickey Mouse? Mickey Mouse?
I don't know what the question is.
The dog connected with Mickey Mouse. The name of the dog connected with Mickey Mouse.
Begins with a B.
Begins with a B. Mr. Dietz, ladies and gentlemen, connected with a motion picture. Well, it's Pluto. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
And I'm afraid we have to ring up $5 on that. Going to Mr. Kendrick. Thank you very much. Didn't do so very well on that dog question. Next one. From Mr. Doyle W. Hunsaker. 3836 Haverhill Drive, Toledo, Ohio. Mr. Hunsaker wants to know, which can see best in total darkness, a bat, an owl, or a leopard? Mr. Hunsaker thinks it's a funny question. Which can see best in total darkness, a bat, an owl, or a leopard?
I don't think it's been determined. I don't know how it could determine.
You don't know how you could determine?
I know that they all see better in the darkness than we do, than humans do.
That's perfectly correct, but listen to the way the question's worded. Which can see best in total darkness, a bat, an owl, or a leopard? Mr. Adams.
A leopard.
A leopard can see best in total darkness, and why?
Because I don't think the question would be asked otherwise.
Ladies and gentlemen. No, that's incorrect. That was a very nice guess on your part. That's going to cost us $5.
Wait a minute.
Oh, it was so fast. Oh, no. That must be answered by one man. That's not a part question.
I think I can answer it now, though.
Mr. Jeff.
I think none of them can really see at all.
That's quite correct. Mr. Jaffe, why is none of them can see?
Well, darkness is the absence of light, and you can't see anything unless there is light.
And why didn't you tell us that a minute or two ago?
Because Mr. Adams stole it from me.
Another minute or two, I won't be able to control this board, folks. They're fighting. Well, the next question is a literary question. Maybe we can get Mr. Adams on this one. This comes from Dr. August A. Tomen of 867 Madison Avenue, New York City. It's a very gloomy question. This is the last stanza of a frequently quoted poem. There is room in the halls of pleasure for a long and lordly train, but one by one we must all file on through the narrow aisles of pain. That's a fine question for a doctor to send in. Now, can any of you quote a few lines from the first stanza of the poem, of which those lines form the last stanza? I don't think this is easy myself. Can't do it, Mr. Radford.
Can't do it.
Mr. Deep, can you
no,
do it?
I can't.
I've got limitations.
Mr. Karen?
No, sir. I have inhibitions.
Jaffe, what have you got to say?
I've got literary ignorance.
Boys are all deceived.
Galloping.
Well, the poem, that is the first stanza of the poem from which that's quoted, is the following. Laugh and the world laughs with you. Weep and you weep alone. For this sad old earth must borrow its mirth, but has trouble enough of its own. Mr. Adams, who wrote that poem?
Ella Wheeler Wilcox.
I know that. $5, Ella. Thank you very
much. Glad I didn't know it.
And now the total record of penalties so far indicates that we have lost, among us, doing very well too, $25. We'll go on now to the next question. This comes from Paul Murphy of Cleveland, Ohio. Identify the following personalities of sport by these nicknames. One, Pat Ramsey. Two, Rabbit Maronville. 3, Mile a Minute Murphy. 4, Needle Eye Murgler. How do you feel about that?
I think I can answer them. I don't have to answer them in that order, do
no,
I?
No, no, no. Take any order.
Well, Pat Ramsey was the president of the United States Golf Association, and he was called Pat because when he was at Yale, he had a big brother who was called Spike.
I have no means of checking Mr. Kieran on that. Probably perfectly correct. How about Rabbit Maronville, Mr. Kieran?
Well, I'll save the rabbit. I know, I'm sure about him. The Needle Eye
Murgler.
Yes. He's a jockey, and he's called Needle Eye Murgler because he used to go through holes along the rail no bigger than the eye of a needle. I believe he's still riding steeplechase. Mile a Minute Murphy was a bike rider. He was so called because he rode a mile in a minute behind a railroad train over a plank track.
What railroad?
The PMO. And Rabbit Moranville, well, there's some dispute. That's why I saved him for the fourth. There's some dispute as to why he was called Rabbit Moranville, because he's a well-known baseball player. And I heard him explaining to Leo DeRocher of the Brooklyn Dodgers why he was called a rabbit. He said because he was small and fast and full of pepper. And Leo said to him, "You're sure it wasn't on account of those ears?"
I think we owe Mr. Kieran $5. There's no way of bringing that up, though. I think I'll toss the next one right into your lap, Mr. Dietz, if that's all right with you. This comes from Mr. Gene Oliver of Chicago, Illinois. What young trio that gave promise at best of becoming hams defied all expectation by dancing and singing their way to fame? Now, be careful of libel, Mr. Dietz. There are a number of people listening to you this evening. What young trio that gave promise at best of becoming hams defied all expectation by dancing and singing their way to fame?
Trio,
you know, that's one, two, three.
Yeah?
I think I've got them, folks, on this one. What's more, the studio audience doesn't know either.
Something that only God can make, isn't it?
No, the Green Bay Trio.
What'd you say about that trio? Something that only God can make?
Yeah.
That is not an answer, at best. Well, gentlemen, you give up, I assume. The young trio that gave promise at best of becoming hands.
I
beg your pardon?
Can I try it?
Yes, Mr.
We've lost $5 anyway, so I can...
All right. No, you
can have it.
What's yours? No, I anyone can answer.
Well, have they all given up?
Oh, sure. Look at their faces. Mr. Jeff.
Maybe it was the three Marx brothers before they became four.
No, that's not true.
They didn't.
No, boys. The young trio that gave promise at best of becoming hams were the Three Little Pigs. You forgot them on that. That's $5. Thank you. Then,
robbery.
Now they're tricked. They feel pretty sore, folks, about that one. Now we go on from ham to eggs. This comes from Mr. Ed Bowden, 151 Fifth Avenue of the city. Question. Two sets of campers, one on the seacoast and one on a rather high mountain, drop eggs into boiling water. Which campers will get hard-boiled eggs first?
Well, let's see. That sounds rather Mr. hard-boiled.
Jaffe. Well, what can you do with it, Mr.
Jaffe? I think I can unscramble that.
All right.
Let's see. I think that the fellow who drops the egg in boiling water at sea level will have that egg boil first.
Why would that
be? Because the boiling point of water at sea level is higher than the boiling point of water at the top of the mountain.
That sounds quite right to me, and that's what it says on this card. That must be correct. Next question from Mr. Donald S. Plopp of 33 Waverly Place, Red Bank, New Jersey. I think this is a pretty easy one. Let's try it. Suppose you were making a literary tour of the country. That's this country. Name the writers for whose sakes you would visit each of the following places. I'll name them one at a time. Walden Pond, Massachusetts.
Mr. Henry Kieran. D. Thoreau.
That was Mr. Adams answering for Mr. Kieran. Next. Sauk Center, Minnesota. Raise your hand quick, Mr. Kieran.
No, I'll give that to him.
Mr. Adams.
H. Sinclair Lewis.
H. Sinclair Lewis is correct. Hannibal, Missouri. Mr. Kieran.
Fellow who wrote Huckleberry Finn and Mark Twain.
Mark Twain, yeah. It'll come to you after a while. Atlanta, Georgia. Mr. Adams?
Joel Chandler Harris.
I haven't let down him, but that's probably quite correct. I'm sure that is correct. Margaret Mitchell or Richmond Caldwell would be equally good, I imagine, as an answer.
I don't know.
Brooklyn, New York. Brooklyn, New York, if you don't mind. Mr. Adams?
Walt Whitman.
Walt Whitman is correct. And the last that I have down on the list here is that famous place made famous by Ogden Nash's immortal couplet, the Bronx, no thunks, the Bronx.
Not the Cobra.
Not the Cobra is perfectly correct. Any other
I would go to see John Kieran myself.
John Kieran.
John...
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I think you're wrong this time. I take Edgar Allan Poe.
Edgar Allan Poe is correct. Well, I think we can say that that question was answered quite correctly for Mr. Donald F. Plopp of Waverly Place, Red Bank, New Jersey. Next question comes from Mr. Edward T. Lauer, 409 Parklow Street, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Question. Well, rather, I'll put this in the form of a situation. Boy meets girl. Girl develops taste for liliaceous bulbs. Liliaceous, L-I-L-I-A-C-E-A-U-S, bulbs. Oh, you know bulbs. Boy leaves girl. According to this story, why did boy leave girl? Mr. Kieran.
Because he's like me. He didn't like onions.
That's correct. What's the meaning of liliaceous bulb?
Well, liliaceous bulb is a bulb of the order, or the variety that the lilies are grown from. The onion is a member of the lily family, as a matter of fact.
Yes, that's very kind of you to give us that information. That's correct. See if we can get a few more in. This one comes from Brooklyn, New York, from P.A. Taylor, 2313 Avenue Z. Name the movies in which the following played important parts. Now, I'm going to name seven, and we'll have to get five out of the seven. The following objects played important parts. One, an apple. In what movie did an apple play an important part?
Oh, well, that's easy.
Miss Carey.
Snow White.
That's correct. A red dress.
The bride wore red.
Was there a red dress?
Yes,
the bride wore red.
Dress.
Correct. A wad of gum. A wad of gum.
I know a picture's very old and probably not right for that answer, but the picture's called Scratch My Back.
Well, you've got me there. That may be true. The picture that I have down here is an MGM pic. You work for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer,
oh, yeah.
Don't you?
Oh, yeah.
It's Test Pilot. Large. Test Pilot. There is a wad of gum in Test Pilot, I believe.
Yes, there is.
All right. That's one wrong or possibly
see it
right.
For the airplane.
Now, mosquitoes.
Mesquite. That's Yellow Jack.
Yellow Jack, he knows that one. An MGM picture also. A hat box. Mr. Deeks?
Mannequin.
Is there a hat box in mannequin?
Yes.
All right. And grapefruit. Grapefruit.
I suppose there's a picture named Grapefruit.
Are you boys trying to bluff me out of this? I have a whole set of different answers down on my card. Grapefruit. Any one of you remember a very famous picture?
Life of Luther Burbank.
Don't guess. How about grapefruit? Well, it was Public Enemy Number One. Don't you remember
That's
the famous picture in which a man assaulted a woman for the first time in motion pictures and got away with it? Quite correct. And finally, Mr. Dietz, a tuba. A tuba. That's T-U-B-A. T-U-B-A.
Thought it was an onion for a minute.
Well, Mr. Dietz, you're not going to town on that one. A tuba.
Green pasture.
No.
They have one in there.
They do have a tuba in green pasture.
Hamlet.
A tuba in Hamlet?
Tuba or not tuba?
I think that's all the questions we'll have time for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. And now for the final penalty. The kitty's been reduced by the round, extremely round sum, of $30. Not bad business. Thank you all, members of the board, and thank you all the folks that have submitted questions. And now Mr. Cross has a word for you about next week's contest. Good night, everybody, and come again.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. We meet again next week at 8:30 for another quiz contest between the public and the experts. The board of experts for next week will include Franklin P. Adams, John Kieran, Marcus Duffield, and guest of honor, Mrs. Carmel Snow, editor of Harper's Bazaar and authority on half the human race, women. Send us your questions and don't forget to include the correct answers. There are no restrictions on the number you may submit. For each question chosen, you get $2. Then if the board flops on that question, you get $5 more. All questions become the property of Information, Please. Questions on all subjects are welcomed. History, sports, literature, music, science, movies, and so on. make the questions interesting and amusing on subjects the expert should know and the public would like to learn about. So come on, everybody, join our new game of quizzing and stumping the experts and send your questions to Information, Please, WJZ, the National Broadcasting Company, New York City. Until next Tuesday evening at 8:30, good night.